Episode 192.
Those are people that I usually see once a year, and I see they're at Vision, and it's, we all go out to dinner, time allowing, and that networking of knowing great technicians, it's kind of like, you know, if you're playing somebody one-on-one in basketball, I hate to use the sports analogy, and you're playing somebody who's a sixth grade kid and you used to play college ball, it's not much of a challenge. But when you're playing somebody who is of like talent or greater talent, it always ups your game. And that's what I would encourage young people to do, would be to get involved, because the technology is, the paradigm shift is just crazy as far as what is coming down the pipe that is going to affect all of us. And it's going to take qualified technicians. And with all the people age-wise, that was where I was kind of going with the 35 years and 50 to 60 years old. All those people that are in that baby boom generation are going to want to, you know, they're going to start getting knees and hips and things like that. And they're going to want to retire out. So there's going to be tremendous opportunities for young technicians that can do electronics and diagnostics, I believe.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results.
Hello, aftermarketers throughout North America and around the world. Carm Capriato here, and welcome to Remarkable Results Radio, the automotive aftermarket's powerful resource of online, on-demand content. It's like Netflix for radio, and I'm with Eric Ziegler here in episode 192. Hey, now, the episode is made possible, as you know, through the sponsorship of Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Search for parts, get the latest technical updates, and sign up for their new Garage Rewards loyalty program at their all-new website. Go to fmmotorparts.com. Hey, have you ever thought about the value the podcast brings to you? Well, I hope you benefit in big ways. Now, it's my driving force to provide these successful stories to you because you get value. Now, I'm a person who links people that need knowledge, and they want to affirm their strategies in a way that's easy to digest in your day-to-day life. That's the beauty of apps, that they'll let you restart where you left off, and, you know, every YouTube video remembers where you ended. So basically, you never miss a beat. Hey, a shout out to Stephen Becquar, H. Paul Henderson III, and Carl Hutchinson for the new Facebook likes, and to James Dean, Dan Tatum, and Michael Gennaro for their new LinkedIn connections. Now get ready to listen to Eric Ziegler. Eric is the owner of Easy Diagnostics Solutions, a mobile diagnostics and programming company specializing in collision centers and auto repair facilities. Eric is also an instructor for automotive seminars and the Drivability Guys. Most likely you've attended one of Eric's seminars, and if not, when you do, you're in for a treat. Eric brought his passion and heart to the interview. He shared his thoughts on the basic way he tackles a diagnostic challenge, the importance of going to training, and the powerful value of technician networking. Eric shares that silver bullets may not work or save time for diagnostic challenges, but not necessarily will always work to prove the solution. He talks labor rates, specialization, and he gives advice to Votech schools and young technicians. Eric shares his memories of a few technicians we recently lost and the power of connections with each other. Eric says the industry has big-hearted people. Technicians and shop owners are some of the most generous people he's ever met. Now prepare for a mighty authentic interview with Eric Ziegler. A warm welcome to Eric Ziegler from Easy Diagnostics Solutions, an instructor at automotive seminars and instructor with the Drivability Guys. Welcome, Eric.
Morning. Glad to be here.
I'm glad you're here. I met you at Apex, and I realized you were a storyteller.
Okay. I guess that could be the rub on me, possibly.
Yeah, 15 minutes, we were actually there just shooting the breeze, and I think you dropped about 10 names, and I said, I got to have this guy on the show.
Well, I don't know if I was dropping names. I think a lot of times you'll have a conversation with somebody that's in the industry, and you realize that as vast as it is with hundreds of thousands of technicians, the network of people that you know in your inner circles is increasingly smaller. And the only reason I had mentioned those names is many of them have been on your podcasts.
And that was a great connection that we had. And I'm so glad that we were able to finally hook up. You started out sweeping floors at 15 years old in a gas station?
I did. very young man that was intrigued by the automotive profession. Well, I can't even say that I was intrigued by it. It was just kind of like a part of my neighborhood kind of teenage years. I kind of ran around with some of the older kids, you know, hung around the garage, you know, some guys doing some street racing back in those days, cruising Main Street, things like that. It was more of a culture that, you know, the old street is neat, not quite the 50s American graffiti kind of thing. I'm a little bit younger than that. But there was a certain culture that was that kind of permeated thing. Working on cars was kind of cool, I guess, in a way. And I never really sought it out as a career. It's just something that just always kind of was something I did and kind of came naturally. So
you're turning wrenches back then, and let's assume that you're in your 20s wrenching. And did you ever stop to think that you'd be a teacher at Vision?
I didn't even think I would be an automotive technician, let alone live this long. So this is a plus on many different fronts.
What do you mean, live so long?
I made some poor lifestyle choices, have some afflictions, I guess you could say, whatever theory you subscribe to. I'm a person of recovery, and address those issues later in life. I wouldn't say later in life, but into my 20s, and it was one thing started to really change my life, and one of the ones was how my career changed.
Thanks for sharing that. That was very honest of you. But when you said career changed, what do you mean?
My career changed in a lot of ways. I went, actually was the only one in my family who didn't have a college education. I actually somehow felt, I wouldn't say inferior, but I always told my mother that, like, I feel bad that you have to tell, you know, your friends, oh, I've got three kids who have a college education. My son, Eric, is a mechanic. And I pretty much opened up the requirements for an associate's in arts and sciences degree when I was making some lifestyle changes, and started checking off classes one by one, and went to school at nights, worked 50 hours a week, went to school 9 to 12 semester hours at night, and kind of for something to do to keep busy, to keep myself out of trouble. And I was, they called me up one day and said, hey, you've got enough credits to graduate. What do you want your degree to be in? And liberal arts or English, or as far as your major goes? And I graduated with an associate's in arts and sciences and was very much going to do something different. Out of the automotive field, I think this is probably the story that you're referring to. I've started many of my classes this way. And it was kind of looking back at the linchpin of all of this was the involvement of two individuals that came in. And one was a salesman by the name of Tim Hotelling with Automotive Seminars, who walked through the door of my shop and said, hey, I hear your guy fixes some hard-to-fix cars, and I've got a trainer I'd love you to see. And I basically gave him the, you know, talk to the hand. Because I'm done. I'm going to do something different. I'm, you know, tired of getting dirty. Wages were stagnant. Cars were OBD late. Most of what you saw was OBD-1 cars, feedback carburetors, which I wasn't a huge fan of, and was going to do something different. My lifestyle had changed. I had made changes in my life, and he implored me to go see an instructor, and he said if I didn't get anything out of it, it would he'd refund my money. And looking back at it, it was a linchpin. It was a life-changing moment for me.
Okay, I want to go into that in a minute, but let's go back and talk about the fact that you were going to leave, and what were you thinking of doing?
I don't know anything. I would have probably cut grass at that point. If they had Uber back then, I'd have been an Uber driver. you know, right. Just anything other than working on cars. So
Tim walks in your shop, and he's actually selling a seminar, right?
He is.
And you decided to say, oh, what the heck? If it's a money-back guarantee, I have to go.
Yeah, it was partially that Tim's an excellent salesman and just is very congenial individual. And, like, he really implored me to go, and somehow he talked me into it. And I'll never forget that night.
The name of the class was?
I can't remember the name of which class it was, but it was an automotive seminars class taught by John Thornton. I could probably look through all my Bibles of manuals that I have. I bet I have 100 and some of them that I've gone to over the years. And I had never met somebody, John would probably kill me for saying this if he hears the podcast. Sorry, John, you're a modest guy. But he's heard this story. I've told his wife this story that I'd never met anybody with such an insatiable passion for our industry and having the ability to make the very complex seem very understandable, and was a great, great, great ambassador for our industry. And I left there with, you know, electric thoughts in my head thinking, you know what, I could stay, I could do this. And like, if there was the old Nike commercial, I want to be like Mike, I wanted to be like John. And I think many, many technicians that I've talked to over the years have echoed the same thing. I know Tom Myers, Bob Hype, both, not dropping names, both podcast people, yeah. Little, if they want to go back and listen to, there's a common thread that John was a catalyst in a lot of careers and a lot of people of my profession. So.
Okay, so you're in John's class. You're being motivated by the change and his inspiration, and now you're teaching at Vision, and he's a teacher there too.
Yeah, I have to kick myself sometimes when I realize what it all happened. Looking back at it, the other part of that catalyst or story, I guess, would be that John always spoke of a conference called the Linder Conference in Indianapolis that Jim Linder put on from Linder Technical Institute. And he always said, you know, it's a really, you know, great conference. It's kind of quaint. There's 200 technicians there. It's taught in a round table, kind of like all the vendors were around the back and they had one giant class size. And I went to my very first Linder conference. It must have been 2004, maybe 2005. And I met so many phenomenal people. That was where I met, you know, not again, not dropping names, but podcast people like Ryan Coyman, Dan Baumart, Matt Fanslow, Mike Miller from Las Vegas, and the late Dave DeCourcy, mm-hmm. who was the very first person that I met. This is before the age of avatars and Facebook, social media, so you never knew what people looked like, right? And we were all early IETN people that hung out in IETN chat together. So there were times that we had spoke together in chat, or we had emailed back and forth, but you never had any idea what the people actually looked like. And after embarrassing myself in the parking lot, being kind of starstruck by seeing Mark Warren for the first time and saying, I'm just a big fan of your work, when I couldn't think of anything else to say, I walked in. I was talking to my wife on my little flip phone at the time, and I said, I just kind of embarrassed myself. I got to go in the back. And Jim had this little hamburger and steak fry thing the night before you could pick your packet up, and I was supposedly going to meet another great instructor, a friend of mine, Ken Zanders. And I walked through the door, and the very first thing I heard was this very thick Boston accent when I got my hello, my name is. And it was my friend later that became a very good friend of mine. That moment was the late Dave DeCourcy. And I heard this, hey, Eck, it's me, Dave DeCourcy from Worcester, Mass. And this is Rusty from Paxton Garage. And like he just instantly made me feel like I knew him forever, embraced me, you know, gave me this hug. And I'm not a very kind of touchy-feely person at first, but I was like, you know, who is this guy? He was just so electric, so full of life. And he had brought like 18 or 20 technicians with him. So it just, everything, I met Scott Schotten, who's my co-trainer with Drivability Guys there. But it was this thing that we all went to every year in the fall over in Indianapolis. And it was the catalyst that sparked all of it. And then it went to Vision and then even blossomed even further with the networking of so many great technicians.
I'm talking with Mike Zralik, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. So you have this van, and it's the Guru on the Go van, and it's all nicely decked out, and you drop by for lunches and learns. How do shops get a chance to get that van to come to their place?
Well, they can, of course, call into our Guru hotline and request it. They can talk to their parts distributor, you know, and through that channel, we can go out and do some training, or even with us out in the field. You know, if they see us, we do various warehouse distributor type shows, many different events. We're out there everywhere. Just come by and ask, and we'll be more than happy to come by.
Hey, Mike, if I said you were a champion for Federal Mogul Motor Parts, would I be right?
You betcha.
So give me an example.
I live, eat, breathe Federal Mogul. on a daily basis. You know, growing up, being in the racing industry, I knew a lot about Moog. I loved Moog. Felpro, same thing. To go out and be able to talk about a company this big, this strong, it makes me happy every single day. I'm so excited to do it on a day in and day out basis.
What are technicians saying after you're done with your presentation?
When can you come back? They want more day in and day out.
They want more, and you have more to give. You've got so many key product lines in the industry.
Oh, we have a ton of product lines and a ton of training that's available, you know, with those product lines and on a technical side too.
How dazzled are the techs to see that compression-loaded ball joint with the pre-installed integral dust boot?
They come unglued. They are so excited about that because less frustrations. You know, they've been dealing with issues in the field of damaging that boot during installation, and it makes it so much easier to put in. And it's a beautiful piece.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com. Do you think there's enough professional technicians in our industry that are doing enough networking?
Oh, absolutely not. I think the average technician, we do mobile diagnostics as a, that's how I make my living other than kind of training is probably 10% of what I do, 90% of what I do is to actually go out to shops, diagnose cars, program cars for collision centers and for repair facilities. And I think there's a lot of technician apathy. Part of it's the technology. Part of it is technicians are getting older. I think the average technician has over 30 years experience and is in his 50s.
So why is it? I mean, I know that you just said you gave me a list of reasons, but let's try to catch the 30 and 40 year old technicians and get them involved. Can you?
Sure.
What can we do? What's the message?
The message I would say would be the same message of my story, of my message, for the same way that, you know, I had apathy and had burnout and things of that nature. And something sparked it. I saw somebody who was a great instructor. I think that was the linchpin in my career, and I think that, like, paying it forward, I think that's part of the reason that I actually, when given the opportunity by Scott with Drivability Guys or with Tim with Automotive Seminars, was to pay it forward myself. It's not so much the classes. I would go to events like Vision every year, and I know people that go to Vision every year that sometimes don't even take a class. They go for the camaraderie, for the top-tier talent of just sheer quality people that are there. People like Carlos and George Menchu from AES Wave, people like Harvey and Pat Chan from IATN. Those are people that I usually see once a year, and I see they're at Vision. And we all go out to dinner, time allowing. And that networking of knowing great technicians, it's kind of like when you're around, you know, if you're playing somebody one-on-one in basketball, I hate to use a sports analogy, and you're playing somebody who's a sixth-grade kid and you used to play college ball, it's not much of a challenge. But when you're playing somebody who is of like talent or greater talent, it always ups your game. And that's what I would encourage young people to do, would be to get involved, because the technology is – the paradigm shift is just crazy as far as what is coming down the pipe – that is going to affect all of us, and it's going to take qualified technicians. And with all the people age-wise, that was where I was kind of going with the 35 years and 50 to 60 years old. All those people that are in that baby boom generation are going to want to, you know, they're going to start getting knees and hips and things like that, and they're going to want to retire out. So there's going to be tremendous opportunities for young technicians that can do electronics and diagnostics, I believe.
Is there ego to come over by, you know, going to a conference like Vision and saying, hey, I'm not the smartest kid in the room, and just go there to learn and absorb?
Oh, absolutely. That's me overdone. I do that every year.
Ah, okay. See, all right. And here you're an instructor too.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, the level of talent there, as it is one of the top conferences in the world. There are people from all over the world that go to Vision to attend. And I do many great seminars like ATE in ASA in Washington, in Seattle, and, you know, events like that. Auto Mechanica is another big, huge gathering in Chicago that I've taught at. But all of them kind of have that same thread of that gathering of technicians. And sometimes it's very embracing. I've never known anybody who ever – I've recommended Division to several people, and I've never met anybody that went and said, eh, it was all right. I think a lot of people go and were the first year I had one gentleman from around here that I actually suggested to go, and he was kind of from a smaller town and kind of shy at first, and he went, and he didn't stay at the hotel where Vision was at. He was at one of the satellite hotels, and he basically went to class and went back to his room and hung out and ordered carry out and sat in his hotel. And I was teaching the whole time, so I didn't have time to check in on him. And I saw him right at the end, and I said, where have you been? And he said, oh, I just went to class and went to my room. And I said, I'm going to kick you square in the tail. Half of being here is meeting new people. And he will be at his fourth or fifth year this year. And he was like, I still remember the first year that I didn't reach out. You were so right. And that they're great techs. They're great shop owners. They're great, management trainers. It's just a great tool vendors. It's just an all-encompassing one giant tent.
Well, I'm so excited to call you a podcast alumni. I have over 40 podcast alumni that are going to be at Vision, and I'm going to be there this year with my studio.
Awesome.
I know. I am so excited.
You and Scott Brown can go around and do little video cameos that he's always done it with IETN
that. Yeah, Scott does a lot of video, yeah.
And that would be the other one that I would say, even looking back, John would be a huge linchpin on that. I can't remember. I think I was probably an IETN member before I actually met John with Automotive Seminars. But that whole community of IETN is where I know so many good people. And I mean, big-hearted people that, like, when tragedy has struck people's lives, auto technicians and shop owners are some of the most giving and generous people I've ever met in my life.
They come together, don't they?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I could tell you a story or two about that as well. But I've just been blessed by the opportunity that this career has actually given me, and part of the blessing is the people.
So lifestyle changes, that was big to you. John Thornton was big to you, and it kept you in the industry. Now, what was the day, think back, where someone came to you and said, hey, we'd like you to teach a class?
My very first class I did was at a group called Wisconsin Auto Techs, and it was a little regional group of shop owners and technicians in the Milwaukee area that was actually set up by, I think, Dan Baumhart's father. I know Dan had a big hand in it, and another friend of mine that I met at Vision by the name of Pete Landry. There was another partner of his that was involved with it by the name of Rick, and I went and did my very first class there, and it was in the middle of winter, and it was one of those deals where they fed everybody. They had, like, fried chicken and mashed potatoes and corn. I had people falling asleep in my class. I am prone to panic attacks that I learned later in life. Public speaking is one of the triggers for that, and I thought I was going to spin out on the whole thing. Everybody's looking at me like, that is the silliest thing I've ever heard in my life, and I'm looking, and I'm seeing one guy, Rick, taking notes in the front, and I'm like, okay, well, I'm at least reaching some people. Rick's a very smart guy. And then after class, I had a couple of people that said they liked it. Most people just filed out. Rick said, I said, was telling the story about, hey, I thought I saw you writing notes, and he had tally marks, and he held up the sheet, and he said, Eric, did you know you use? I wasn't taking notes. I was keeping track. You used the word whatever 87 times in 3.5 hours. And he said, I'm not trying to bust your stones here. I think you've got great potential. I would hate for you to go to Vision and try to train at Vision and become known as the whatever instructor. And it is like any other tick. You don't realize you do it until you do it. So,
oh, that is a great story.
I owe Rick a great deal of thanks in that regard. And sometimes when I get nervous, my wife says I still do it. So, whatever.
I'm with you. I've been in them shoes before where you have to actually watch the video or listen to the audio and say, man, you thought you were on fire, and then when you heard yourself, say, who would listen to him?
Yep. So they actually had me back to Wisconsin Auto Techs a couple of times, and Scott with the drivability guys. Bob Hype and Scott Schotten were the original drivability guys, and Bob went to doing some different venues and went into the mobile industry and kind of left training. And Scott had asked me if I would do some training with him. So we taught at the AV Tech Expo in Grand Rapids and in Milwaukee. And then I think those were the first couple of bigs, and I submitted to Vision, and I actually had the person's probably going to hear this podcast, but they actually like motivated me in a slight way. They said, "I saw that you submitted to Vision. Why would you do that? That would be the equivalent of training suicide." And
what did they mean by that?
They meant it, I think, in a very affectionate way, that maybe my game wasn't quite up to the Vision
you
mark.
You weren't ready. Okay.
But and they'd never seen me train, so they didn't know. So it was my first year at Vision was definitely a challenge.
Do you remember the year?
I would have to probably look back. It's probably my seventh year at Vision.
Okay.
When I talk about big-hearted people, I think it must have been my second year at Vision, my first year mobile. I was ready to leave the industry doing mobile. I kind of got emancipated from my last position. My wife said, or my then girlfriend, now wife said, you know, what are you going to do? I said, I don't know. And she actually proposed marriage to me so we would have health insurance. We had a grandbaby on the way. So this has been like 5 years ago. And I was actually going to leave the industry. I decided to go mobile full time. And I did, I'd been doing it nights and weekends. And I was a mobile technician full time for almost a year. And I got a call from a friend of mine that I'd met at Vision, and he has a little girl that's the same age as my grandson. And he actually said to me, you know, do you know anybody in the St. Louis area that does mobile? And I was like, or how far is it from you is what he asked. And I said, it's about 3 hours. And as the conversation went on, I was like, you got a friend's got a car broke down. What's going on there? And he said, no, my daughter Stormy is going to need a heart transplant. And I instantly, and I was literally on my way home. I had six or seven cars that I couldn't figure out. It was the middle of January. It was really, really cold. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go back to twisting wrenches again. This is just too hard. And instantly, my mom used to say, I once cried when I had no shoes till I met somebody who had no feet. I realized I don't have a problem in the world. And as it went, I walked through the door. My wife had the iPad out, and she was like, see the picture of Reese, who's our grandson. And I had this juxtaposition, like, you know, what kind of cosmic force happens that one baby needs has a congenital heart defect, and how are we so blessed to have this healthy, lovely grandson? And to add worse insult to injury, this individual's wife had worked for Hostess, and they scuttled the ship. They lost all their health care. They, you know, this person's working at night, doing drivability, putting injectors in the barn. Good old country boy, doesn't want any help from anybody, make it on his own way. And I asked him what the COBRA payment was, and the COBRA payment was $1,800 a month. And it was going to be 4 or 5 months till his wife had her new job had insurance. And I kind of put it out at a Skype group. And we raised, this is one of my proudest moments being an auto technician, we raised $8,000 in less than 4 days for this individual, and all sent it anonymously. There were people on IETN that were like, hey, I got a van full of rotors out back. We usually, you know, buy a barrel of beer and a turkey at Thanksgiving or whatever and have a house, you know, shop party or something. Sick kid trumps that. Where do I send the check? And I went to Vision that year and I told that story, and they had a Facebook page that was set up. This is before GoFundMe. And I told the story at the end of every class, and I had so many people that came up that gave money, that you know what I mean, took down their Facebook link, that sent, you know, warm thoughts, said prayers, and by the grace of God, that little girl has not had to have the heart transplant. So
what a great story. And again, it goes back to what you said earlier about the great hearts that do exist in our industry. You know, Eric, you said you love what you do. It's like getting paid to sleep.
I think that's probably a very G-rated version of what I said. But yeah, I mean, when it's good, it's really good in that regard, that it can be like anything else. When it's bad, it can be really bad, just because what we do, the training side of it, I love. That's just getting up and telling a story, trying to motivate people, trying to discuss a case study on a car that you fixed, trying to relay some new technology or procedures to somebody. But as the mobile side of things, as a mobile technician and as a mobile technician small business owner, it's always a challenge. You never know what you're going into. It could be something very simple, like everything was fine and the car was in a collision, or you could be going to a repair facility that has inherited this car that has been from a rebuilder, something like that. So it's always a challenge, but it's I think getting back to just all of it, I think it's the people. It's the people that I really enjoy. I enjoy the business owners that I do business with and the techs that work for them.
But you're wired to do this.
Somehow, I guess, you know, the old, John F. Kennedy or Lloyd Benson to Dan Quayle debate or whatever. And I think Dan Quayle quoted John F. Kennedy and Lloyd Benson says to him, "Sir, I knew John F. Kennedy was a friend of mine. You, sir, know John F. Kennedy." I think if you take John F. Kennedy out there and put great technicians, I know some really great, great technicians. I am not one. I am just somebody who will not take no for an answer. And it's just like the boxer who will never be the heavyweight champion, but just keeps getting up after they've been knocked down.
All right. So you're a grinder.
I am that. That I will cop to.
All right. Okay. Hey, any special ways to approach a diagnostic challenge? Is there any, you know, just a magical way that you go about it?
I would say keep it simple. At its simplest form, try to break things down to their base element. I think oftentimes people get in the fantastical. I know others have spoken on the podcast about the proliferation of information in the information age. And my friend Scott Grohn from Fort Collins, Colorado, coined the term GSI. And I was like, what's GSI? And he says, Google Service Information. So rather than actually go onto the OE site and get the service information, people are Googling, YouTubing, using some sort of pay site to actually find the silver bullet to actually fix cars. And like a lot of times where we go, those sites have all been perused. The silver bullets have all been shot from the gun, and it's time to actually diagnose the car. I have nothing wrong with the silver bullet. It sometimes can be a time saver, but at the same time, find a way to prove something to yourself. I went to a Scott Manna class years ago, and Scott always said, a good technician will find a way to prove something one way. A great technician will find a way to prove it twice. So if you think you have it figured out, like say the mass airflow is the one, the silver bullet or whatever, find a way or design the experiment is what from my essential diagnostics class to prove it to yourself. And if you can validate it one way, just like you would in the scientific community, maybe you validate it a second way. And somehow when you do the validate it a second way, you exponentially increase your odds for being right because you've got a control and a variable as far as your experiment goes. But the other thing is it gives you another – you learn more as a technician by how to figure out things more than one way other than clicking the mouse and typing in something in Google. So I would say, yeah, keep an open mind and start out with a simplistic approach. And one of the ways that I had a technician, Brian will kill me for this, for speaking this, when he came to work for me, Brian at 26 years old, was already master technician. And anything that I could pose in the way of an ASE test question, Brian would hit it out of the park. Some of the struggle of going from the shop environment to mobile was A, the speed, and B, diagnosing cars every single day, multiple times. So I finally got a pad of paper out and I drew a line down the middle and then a line through the middle. And I made it into four squares. And I write right in one corner what you know. In the other corner, write what you don't know. In the lower corner, write what you want to know. And then next to it is how could I prove to myself what I want to know. And we all do this as technicians every day. Like car comes in, doesn't have any fuel pressure. The, you know, that's a crank, no start. The first test we may do is put a fuel gauge on the fuel rail. You know, and then if we have fuel pressure, then, hey, am I getting it to the cylinders? That's, you know, I'm constantly redoing my hypothesis.
So it really helps to have an incredibly logical approach to anything you want to repair.
Oh, absolutely. I think the greatest thing that any VOTEC instructor or any VOTEC program could have. And nothing against any of these. They're dropping like flies around the country. And the high schools here don't even teach it in my hometown anymore. Would be, you know, don't spend a year on the four-stroke cycle and piston rebuilding engines and things like that. That's kind of an archaic, you know, from the 50s kind of thing. Not that the four-stroke cycle and internal combustion isn't important, but that you could spend a year on, you know, logical and critical thinking, I think, is the thing moving forward. To be able to, because we work on stuff, and I'm honest with people and honest with myself, we work on stuff every day that sometimes we know very little and sometimes nothing about. But we have good use of sources, and we have good equipment, and we're grinders, as you said.
All right. So what are you doing to burn it off? What's your what are you doing to just get away?
I don't know. I'll have to let you know when I find that. I think that people that do this and have a passion for this, it's not only just a career or an occupation. It's a lifestyle kind of thing. I do enjoy my time with my family. I've got two grandkids and two stepkids in Florida. Me and my wife get down there as often as we can to spend time with family and get away. But like I said, I would go. Like my wife actually goes with me to some of these training seminars. I have friends whose wives like don't like them to talk about shop when they leave the shop or whatever. My wife knows, you know, Dan and Ryan Koyman and Matt Fanslow and Mike Miller and John Thornton and Scott Manna and all those guys, and they all know my wife. So like when she runs into them, they all like big hugs and happy to see one another, and we go out to dinner. So it's a community, and you know, sometimes it's talking shop over dinner and stuff like that. But I think if you find something you really truly love, you'll never work a day in your life.
Man, I just so agree with that. So you have a second home in Florida.
I do. This was actually spawned out of Richard, who worked for Pico USA, was a friend of Matt Fanslow, tragically died earlier this fall at the rare age of 30 years old. And it was kind of it punched me in the stomach a little bit. And we were just kind of on a visiting trip, and I realized that there's probably more days off the calendar than on the calendar for me, and that I really want to spend time with those two little grandkids of mine and make sure I make those little league games and stuff like that that my dad missed because he was, you know, in that 1960s, 1970s working kind of environment. So that's what's important to me is family and friends, too. So try to get a little travel time to do all that.
What gets you out of bed in the morning?
The fact that knowing people such as Richard, such as my friend Dave DeCourcy, that have left us, you know, every day is a promise of a new thing. And I have been through some dark periods of my life when I did not look forward to the next day. And quite frankly, I look forward to the last day, I would say. But life's a blessing, and it's a promise for nobody.
You're an absolutely engaged individual in our industry. When you look down the road, how do you see the future shaping up for our industry, you know, when it comes to technology?
Oh, technology is going to be a dual-edged sword. I think there's going to be a Darwin kind of style culling of the herd, which everybody is, you know, the talking heads have been talking about for years. But just the sheer magnitude and the rate that it is coming at, and the parts that are lasting longer, the serpentine belts that are going 80, 100,000 miles, spark plugs that are going to less service intervals, there's going to be less and less opportunities for the corner guy who's just doing an oil change and put a belt on your car. And there's going to be more and more opportunities for people who, but it's going to come at a price. You're going to have to be engaged. You're going to have to attend events like a vision, and it comes with a lot of work. But I think that there are going to be tremendous opportunities for young people, especially in our industry, because there are a lot of the bell curve of baby boom technicians is coming. So I don't know. Like I said, a double-edged sword. I know a lot of people that are like, no, I'm running for the doors. I'm not going to do it. But you're going to see, I think, labor rates are going to go increasingly higher. I heard something when I was out at a gentleman I met at Vision a couple of years ago, Dave Denman from Dave's Car Care in Phoenix, Arizona. Very progressive shop. We actually has had us out there doing some training and stuff. And he was saying that, like, he's kind of got his finger on the pulse of, you know, where things are going and labor rates, that by 2025 in, like, the Phoenix metro area, they're talking about labor rates being $250 an hour. So there's going to be opportunities, but you're going to have to be able to walk the walk and talk the talk.
Do you see specialization being a very key part of the future?
I would say that, in general, yes, because for, you know, the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s garage, especially independent, like, you worked on a little bit of everything. But I think that, like, with the technology, with each car line being intrinsically different from one another, that that may be a business model for some shop owners, if you can do it. In some locales, it'd be really hard if you're in a small market or something to say, hey, we're only going to work on Subarus. But, like, if you're in Denver, Colorado, or something that is the largest Subaru market in the country, you could probably, you know, if you were a Subaru tech and very Subaru-centric, you could do that wholeheartedly. There's a gentleman by the name of Steve Butherton, an IETN guy in Florida, and Steve at Continental Imports is specialized in Euro only and has, you know, dedicated himself, his time, his training, his tooling for doing that. They're not doing a Ford that rolls in the door. You know, they're doing Mercedes and BMW and Volvo.
Hey, are you ever going to retire?
Oh, I don't know. I wouldn't say retire. I love what I do. The training is kind of a grind physically when you're out on the road 2 and 3 days in a row. But no, I can't see it in my future. Because it's the people. I mean, even when I go out and train and, like, I have to physically stand up and talk for 3.5 hours, like, you think that would be a challenge for a big mouth like me, right? I enjoy it. The people that attend, I enjoy the people that I see. I enjoy the people I interact with, because the one thing about the Automotive Seminars group is those people have had, many of those groups have been together 10, 15 years, and they see John 5 times a year, and then they have me for one extra class. So they're a very high level of technicians and some younger technicians that are being brought along. So I often say I'm an old deadhead, but I believe in the theory of one man gathers what another man spills. So we all are in this collective together, and, you know, sometimes you just, in the strangest places, come up with these, you know, different life lessons that you learn from people, or different tech things that you pick up from others. And that's why I keep going. I don't see myself bowing out anytime soon.
Eric, give me a great piece of sage advice for an upcoming technician and the opportunities that exist in our industry.
Be humble. Be driven, and to thine own self be true. Be true to yourself, be honest with yourself, and nobody got here to be a great technician overnight. It is, what's the old Chinese proverb? That even the journey of 1,000 miles begins with one footstep. So if you are in that realm of, you know, it's not necessarily the destination, but the journey, which is a little cliche, but I think that's it. That, like, if you're humble and you have an open mind and an open heart to things, that the rest will all fall in place if you surround yourself with the right people. And that doesn't matter what you do in life, whether it's family, whether it's career, whether it's lifestyle change. It's all about who you surround yourself with. And I always equate the not to offend anybody's religious sensibilities, but I knew when I went to Lender the first time, it was like somebody who was searching for the right church or the right motorcycle club or the right bridge club or the right boat club or the right whatever, that, like, I knew when I was there immediately, when I met Dave DeCourcy and then Ryan Coyman right after that, that, like, I had a riven, that I had met my people. And I think there are a lot of those my people in this industry. And if you never get out, you're never going to meet them. So I would really encourage people to do training in their local areas, you know what I mean, to attend training. And then I would encourage people to maybe try to venture out and go to an Auto Mechanica or a Vision or a Washington ASA ATE, some bigger event like that that is a magnet for drawing high caliber technicians and shop owners, and be open to learning.
Eric Ziegler, thank you.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. I can't believe how quick the time flew by. And the one thing I would – I know Matt ended his piece with when he did it was wishing for Dave and Richard's health. Unfortunately, both of them passed. There is a Dave DeCourcy scholarship set up at Vision that there is a GoFundMe, not to be all political or whatever. Many, many times Dave DeCourcy would pay other people's way to go to top training like Lender, like Vision and stuff like that. So it's only fitting that we carry that torch and continue on. We're big-hearted people, and we'll do great things together.
Well said, man. Thanks.
Hey, I appreciate it. You take care.
Hey, guys and gals, thanks so much for listening. Find additional show notes on Eric Ziegler, who's from Easy Diagnostic Solutions, and you know he's a trainer with Automotive Seminars and the Drivability Guys. Find additional bio notes on Eric at his show notes page on the website. It's at remarkableresults.biz/E192, and that's also the place where you can watch Town Hall Live replays on the Town Hall page. It's powerful, single-subject content just for you. Now, if you're driving, thanks for listening. You can re-listen anytime, you know. Podcasts are like Netflix for radio. Thank you for sharing this rich content into the aftermarket, like connecting on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. And sharing the episodes helps get the story out. Hey, I'm thankful and grateful for your support. Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from another inspiring aftermarket professional. Until next time.